Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
The wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. With me today is somebody I'm proud to call a friend of mine, and he's somebody that I've looked up to long before that. Today we are going to speak with IFBB Pro Shelby Starnes. We have him here today to talk about what we can do to be the best competitor that we can be. And in my mind, he's somebody that I look up to, and I've asked myself, what can I do to be better? Sometimes the thought in my head comes in, what would Shelby do in this situation? So this is an interview that I've wanted to do for a long time, probably all the way back since episode one. So no pressure, Shelby, but thanks for being here with me tonight, man.
Thanks for having me on, Scott. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I feel like it was something I didn't want to do right away. I felt like... since I knew you, I felt like it would have been easy to just say like, hey, Shelby, I got this new show. Would you do this with me? But I felt like I wanted to get better at it and hopefully do a better interview with you. You've done a lot of different podcasts through the years. You had your own podcast, Blue Collar Muscle Radio, which I got to tell you, man, that was one of my favorite shows. I think you and John did an awesome job at that, by the way, man.
Good fun for sure.
But do you ever think about going back to podcasting at all, or do you feel like you had enough?
I don't think it's a good fit for my personality.
No, why is that?
I was asked to do that, and me and John were both asked to do that, and I think we had decent chemistry, but and it went well, and it lasted a while. I don't know. I'd rather be interviewed a couple times a year than interview someone else every week or whatever,
Yeah, I could see that.
I think you have to be more social than I am.
Yeah, that's probably part of it. But I think, though, you have a lot of really good information to share. And, for anybody who follows you on social media, every week or so, or sometimes more often, I see you put posts out, and you write in various places too. I've seen a lot of your articles, and you share a lot of things that relate to what I would consider to be the psychological side of being the best competitor you can be. The part about the not just the how, because the how is there, but it's also a lot to do with motivation, and I feel like that's more of an abstract thing. I feel like that you're good at articulating those things.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm better at writing than talking, I think. So forgive me for this interview. Maybe we can transcribe it
instead. Yeah. No, I hear you. Writing, you have more control over it, and you can pick the words you're going to use, and you can craft it, I think, a little bit better than there's a lack of control for sure. When you're just speaking.
Someone asked me the other day when I'm going to do a Facebook Live. And I was like, well, never. But I mean, first of all, there's a technology issue. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And you would think it's pretty simple because everybody and their idiot brother is doing it right now. But I don't know how to do it. Everyone that really shouldn't be live is talking to us on Facebook. But I don't know how to do it. I tried to do it once, and I looked at my phone. I just don't see the option to do it. But anyways, I prefer the written Q&As because it's I just have more control over it. You know, it gives me – I have a relatively quick wit, but it's not instant. Hmm. So it gives me – you know, if it takes me 30 seconds to think of the right answer, that's okay.
That's what we use editing for on the radio shows. Cause,
oh, okay.
Yeah, believe me, your wit is like 10 times faster than mine. I see somebody post something on your Facebook and then I just wait for the reply. And like you said, it's 10 seconds later. So yeah, maybe you have the 10 second lag, but 10 seconds later is very fast in Facebook time. But anyway, so we could probably just start rambling about all sorts of random stuff here, but I feel like, you know, I want to give you a little bit better of an introduction for anybody who isn't familiar with you. You turned pro in 2012 at Masters Nationals, right?
Correct.
Before that, you had been a very popular prep coach in the industry, and I feel like since then you've just grown. I've seen the quality of people that you put out, especially with a lot of these women, man. I feel like you're churning out some amazing competitors. How many pros do you have if you have the count under your belt that you've turned pro?
People that I've helped turn pro, I think it's getting close to the mid-20s right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's freaking amazing, man. And I feel like you've seen all sorts of people, you know, that have come to you. Just through that alone, I feel like you get a good sense for, you know, what it takes to be, you know, a champion, basically. I imagine, can you sense that from somebody when somebody approaches you and, you know, they start telling you about their plan and you look at their physique? Is it something that you can kind of gauge right when you first start talking to them? Like, this person has the mindset?
Yeah, if they're vocal about it, you know, I mean, some people are a little bit more withdrawn or whatever, but, you know, I mean, if someone comes to you, I mean, obviously genetics plays a role, but it's not everything. And, you know, being motivated and disciplined is just as much a part of the equation, or, you know, or it's a large part of the equation, because there's a lot of people with great genetics that never put it all together.
Yeah.
But there's people with terrible genetics that, regardless of how hard they try, are just not going to, you know, turn pro or anything like that. But those people make incredible progress. You know, you can always improve from where you're at right now. But, you know, I mean, some people come to me and I know, you know, there's someone that's already been competing for a while and they're kind of knocking on the door or whatever. Mm. And we're able to help them get to the next level or whatever. But I mean, a lot of times you can just tell, you know, if it's someone that's new to competing or whatever, you can just tell how disciplined they are. You know, if they're missing check-ins, if they're making excuses, if, you know, they've got, you know, all these things working against them, you know, mentally, environmentally, whatever, then that's probably not an environment conducive to producing a champion.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Yeah. You know, so a lot of what I'm thinking here and a lot of the reasons that I feel like you're a really good person to talk to about this topic is because you've had a lot of experience with people that have been successful, and I'm sure, you know, people that that haven't stepped up to the plate. So you've probably, you know, you've seen both sides of that. But then also, you know, you're a very successful person in your own right, you know, in the field of bodybuilding, and you've done a ton with your own physique. So, you know, looking at these things, I'm kind of asking you these questions based off of looking at you and seeing what you've done, and then also, you know, gathering the information from basically your entire life, because you're surrounded by all these people that are also, you know, striving to be their best. one thing that I look at when I think about your program and what you do, a word that comes to mind for me is simplicity. I feel like by nature, what you do on paper, it looks very simple. You just do the things that you need to do to reach your goals. And I mean, that sounds like super black and white, but why is it that so many people have a difficult time carrying that out?
Why do people have a difficult time doing what exactly?
Well, I look at your program.
Being consistent?
Yeah.
What is my program?
I look at your life. I look at the way that you live it. And, you know, you set out to do something and then you just take the steps. And when I see somebody do that on paper, that looks very simple. I see a lot of people, though, that are trying to do that exact same thing, but they might not. You know, they don't get the same results. So, you know, not everybody is turning pro. Not everybody is, you know, putting on the amount of muscle that you've put on. You know, I remember seeing you back, you know, in 2009 at Central States, and, you know, compared to now, you were very small. You know, you've put on a ton of mass since then. And I know that that's because you've consistently worked. So I guess consistency is a big part of that. But, you know, it's consistently doing those right things over a long period of time. Why is it that you know, some people can't follow that when other people like yourself make that look really easy?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you know, you've only known me since 2009 or so.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been a relatively decent bodybuilder. I mean, I guess I've been a relatively decent bodybuilder since I started competing, but I didn't start competing until I was lifting for almost 10 years.
Hmm.
It's like you're looking at my highlight reel, I guess. Like, I mean, I had a lot of years where I wasn't really sure what was going on. I was always relatively consistent, but I wasn't, you know, 100% sure of what my goals were. And a lot of it was trial and error. You know, I mean, I worked with Dante Trudell, of Dog Crap fame a long time ago, 2000, 2001, after I'd only been into training for a few years.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm someone that can put on a lot of fat very easily, and it takes me a while to add muscle. And I mean, Dante is a super smart guy, and Dante admitted those two things years later. He said, you know, I worked with Shelby. Shelby puts, you know, I probably didn't have him on the right diet style. You know, it takes him, it's hard for him to gain muscle, easy to put on fat. So, I mean, I went through a lot of phases of trying different things that didn't really work that well. But, you know, I mean, that just gave me greater insight into the variety of metabolisms and variety of training methods and, you know, all the different intricacies of bodybuilding. And I mean, I would say in the last, whatever, you know, 8-10 years, I'm kind of starting to figure it out a little bit. but. So, I mean, that's part of it. You know, someone might be like, okay, oh, Shelby, like, you know, you're making good progress now or whatever. But there was times when I wasn't always making good progress, and there was a lot of trial and error. But I stuck with it. You know, I learned from every experience and kept on going because I was motivated. And when I say motivated, I just mean I want to be the best that I can at whatever it is that I'm trying to do. Why do people fail at it? I mean, it's a variety of reasons, but it's almost always going to be, I mean, if you went up to someone and they failed and you would say, why did you fail? they would have an excuse. They would have probably multiple excuses and multiple reasons why they didn't reach their goals. And, you know, a lot of times it's maybe those reasons and excuses came up after only a couple years of trying. Maybe they came up after only a couple days. But, you know, the one thing, and I've said this before, but like anyone that I've worked with that's like truly a badass and like truly a champion, they just do not make excuses. I've never heard an excuse out of their mouth. You know, they like, it's not even, they don't have that mindset. The mindset is, okay, this is what I've got to do. Now I've got to figure out how to make it happen. Not a mindset of, oh, this is what might work best, but oops, this happened. Guess I can't do it now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the number that's kind of a simple way to encapsulate it is that, you know, champions don't make excuses. They figure out ways to make things happen. Yeah. I mean, that's not, I mean, not everyone can be a Michael Jordan or whatever, you know, but we can all make excellent progress from where we're at right now if we're willing to stick with it, if we're willing to, you know, regularly assess our progress and, you know, adjust as necessary based on the results that we're getting.
Do you feel like maybe some people don't want it as bad as they say they do, or maybe even as much as they believe they do?
Oh, yeah. Most people, they get little flashes of motivation, but once some pain sets in, they bail. Yeah, it sounds cool, or, everyone on social media wants to turn pro, so yeah, I guess I want to turn pro too. It's, you know, oh, it's a hashtag that I can add, but it might not really resonate with them, you know, like truly down to their core or whatever, like it does with the people that do get there.
Yeah. You know, I remember a couple years ago, I was struggling to put on weight, and I had some serious constraints because of a real physical job and having a fast metabolism. I felt like I was eating as much as I possibly could. And you and I were talking about that. You had made a couple suggestions, and it was just like my natural reaction to say like the word, but, you know, or I can't do that because, like, I didn't even really recognize that I was doing that. And you had said to me in response, you said, well, let's focus on the things that you can do. And honestly, until you said that, it was like a subconscious thing. I didn't even recognize it in myself. And I'd consider myself somebody who did want to reach those goals. But, you know, it was definitely an interesting point that it brought up. And it makes me think about how we can sabotage ourselves. But I feel like, you know, sometimes we set ourselves up for failure. Can you talk about that topic? Maybe where you've seen it in clients that you've worked with, or maybe even where you've seen it in your own life, and what can we do to get around that?
I kind of made a post about this on Facebook today. I mean, I think the best thing that you can do is learn to pay attention to your thought, you know, your thought patterns, your thinking.
Yeah.
You know, pay attention to your thoughts and your actions, and say, okay, is this giving me a good result or consequence, or is it giving me a bad one? You know, is my current level of thinking producing the results that I want to get to? And I mean, it's tricky because, I mean, the mind is the trickiest thing. We fool ourselves all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all we do is fool ourselves.
Yeah. Talk about that, because that's interesting to me.
I don't have anything else to say about it.
You sounded like you had a book to write about it, but all right, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I mean, the mind fools yourself all day. That's all it does. I mean, it tricks itself. You have to learn to, as best you can, realize how your brain is working. Like, oh, am I constantly looking at the problems in my life, or am I constantly looking at the opportunities and blessings and things I'm grateful for? Just go look at someone's Facebook wall, and you can tell if they post much what their thinking is like. I won't name any names, but there's a certain person that every post they make is a gripe about something.
Yeah.
It's always negative. And they're right. I mean, it's not like they're posting incorrect information, but shut the fuck up, bro. I've never seen one post by them that was positive or enlightening.
Yeah.
Or like helping anyone out, you know, in a positive fashion. Obviously that's someone with a negative attitude, and that's going to affect their whole life. Yeah. Not just their bodybuilding efforts, but anything. And then maybe you find someone else that is posting only positive things. And I don't mean to sound like you need to be Pollyanna-ish, and like, you know, not be aware that there's negative things in the world. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, you can choose where you focus. I mean, if you focus on like what we were just talking about, what's going to help you reach your goal better? Focusing on what you can't do or what you can do?
Yeah.
So.
I like. Yeah, that.
just being aware of that. I don't think people place enough attention on their own thought patterns and where they're leading them. I mean, everyone kind of knows, yeah, I'm probably a positive person. Yeah, I'm a negative person, but they don't really use that information wisely, I think.
You mentioned, too, you said, you know, the things that you're grateful for. I think that, you know, gratitude is something I've heard you talk about before, and I know it's important in my life. I think that I can look at the things I'm grateful for, and that can take me out of a bad place. Do you practice any type of, I don't want to say like formal meditation, but any type of like gratitude list writing or anything like that?
Yeah, I have a gratitude journal that I just jot things down. It's just a spreadsheet on my computer. And I try to add things to it daily, you know, add new things to it.
Okay.
Or new insights. Because, I mean, there's just so much stuff. There's so many things to be grateful for that we just totally take for granted and don't even think about. Mm. You know, you might get bummed about a bad comment on Facebook, and then you dwell on that, and it's all you think about for the next 3 hours, and it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, in the meantime, you're living in America, you've got power, you've got running water, you know, you've got a great job, you know, you're doing what you want. I mean, there's just a million things that you can be grateful for, but instead you got your mind wrapped around that comment from someone that you don't even really care about. On a Facebook pic or something like that.
Yeah. And listen, if you were to probably look at that post, that's probably like, you know, one out of 40 comments, and the other 39 were probably positive, right?
Right, right. And how much will this matter in 1 year, 5 year, 10 years?
It's right.
It's probably not going to even matter tomorrow. But that's just, you know, that's how our minds can play tricks on us.
You know, I forgot about that. I've heard that actually something that you can use as a tool to ask yourself that question. You know, how much is this going to affect me in 1 year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally forgot about, you know, something else I was thinking about. You know, I know that for myself competing, you know, year after year, I compare myself to what I've done before, and to me, in a way, that's positive. It helps me to push and to be better. But as we go, you know, we raise the bar constantly, and that pressure grows. I can only imagine how high that pressure can become, you know, the pressure that we put on ourselves if you're to turn pro. And, you know, somebody like yourself that is a successful coach in the industry, too. I mean, I just understand just everything that could go into that and how that could become, you know, such a negative thing. How do you deal with those pressures?
Well, I think any pressure is self-imposed. I don't, you know, even pressure from the outside, you choose your reaction to that. I mean, you always choose your reaction to everything. So I don't think I have any much pressure from the outside. People don't care about me as a bodybuilder. I'm not that great as a bodybuilder. You know, I'm a lower tier 212 pro. If I stop competing tomorrow, no one cares. As a coach, I'm a little bit more successful as a coach, but again, I don't personally feel much pressure. I mean, obviously there's pressure as a coach. I want to be the best that I can be so that my clients can be the best that they can be. And I mean, I thrive on their success, but I don't feel pressure. I don't feel like people are breathing down my neck, watching my results or anything like that.
Okay.
It's all self-induced. I don't feel like I have pressure from others. And if it is, I think it's a positive thing. I don't think it's a negative thing. You know, okay. I think it's an honor to be able to do what I'm doing at the level that I'm doing it at.
Yeah.
So like, there's nothing negative about what I do. Like I can't complain about anything.
No, that says a lot, really. I mean, it really does. I feel like, you know, you could probably look at yourself in a totally different way. I guess that's what it is. It's like you said, it's self-induced, and everything you just said is, I feel like it's a reflection of how you view yourself. That's what I'm getting out of it. And, maybe if you were like really self-important, it might go down differently.
Yeah, I try to minimize that as much as possible.
You do. I feel like you are, you're super humble. You know, I think anybody would agree with me on that. Almost too much sometimes. I don't agree that you don't have good genetics. You've said that in the past, you know, and maybe, you know, you don't have the top genetics that are out there, but I definitely think that they are better than some people. So I want to say that for the record here on the show.
Well, every year that I am consistent and every year that I learn more and apply more, my genetics get a little bit better.
All right. You know, I think I'm going to jump down to a question I had planned for a little bit later, because it really does tie in here. You know, this is a while back, back on Blue Collar Muscle Radio. You and John were taking questions, and early on, I had written in a question that related to talking about the mindset of a champion, which I guess that's not too different than what we're talking about here. Part of your response was that you had wondered whether being a hard worker was potentially part nature, that maybe there was some nurture involved in it, but maybe that in itself, being a hard worker, is a genetic trait. What would make you think that, just out of kind of curiosity to dive into that one a little bit deeper?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's 100% genetic. I mean, genetics are a tricky thing, and it's not like, oh, your parents are hard workers, so you're going to be a hard worker too.
Yeah.
But I think to a certain extent, you know, like being hardworking, you know, having, especially self-discipline, I think self-discipline is And some people have it, some people don't. When I was, whatever, 11 or 12, the summer between elementary school and middle school, however old you are then, 11 or 12,
yeah.
I went on a self-imposed 1,000-calorie day diet and lost, I don't know, 30, 35 pounds. Like, that's, I mean, no one taught me that.
Yeah.
You know, I just had that, you know, that ironclad will or discipline or whatever, or stubbornness from an early age, from a get-go. You know, that's, it's not hard for me to do that. And my father is the same way. But I have siblings that wouldn't fall under that category. So it's not like we all got it. And then other people struggle to stay on a diet for a day or two. And I mean, some of that's environmental, but I think a lot of it is hardwired as well. I mean, it's always going to be a mix. But yeah, I think there's definitely a hardwired component to discipline. Discipline, hard work, motivation, however you want to categorize that.
All right. Yeah, it was just I thought it was interesting, and if nothing else, obviously we can't nail that one down, but I thought it was interesting to speculate about, because I feel like you might be onto something there. There's something in certain people that they're just more likely to be able to do what they want to do, whether it be bodybuilding or, you know, starting a business or whatever it is. And I always wonder where that comes from.
For sure. And then you'll see the same thing in people. Rich Gaspari is a good example. Rich Gaspari has decent genetics, not the best, but decent genetics, and made his way to a very high level in the IFBB in the 1980s. And, you know, he's a very competitive person. He's a very disciplined person. You know, he's got a lot of traits that help lead to success in that arena. And then when he retired from bodybuilding, he did really good in the business world. Jay Cutler. You know, there's lots of examples of that, people that were successful in bodybuilding and then went on to be successful in other endeavors. And I think that's, I think a lot of that is because they're hardwired for success.
Yeah, hardwired to be.
A lot of people, bodybuilding taught them hard work. Well, maybe a little bit, but I think they're just hardwired for success. And they happen to find bodybuilding. And that scratched the success itch for a while. And then they needed to do something else to scratch the success itch. I'd like to patent that right now. Scratching the success itch.
You make a hashtag out of it, we'll be set.
Yeah.
So, you know, you strike me as someone that, you know, you don't get too comfortable with your achievements, Shelby. You know, you like you were saying, you're saying that, you know, you don't see yourself as this great pro, this top person. And you said that you feel like you're, you know, decently successful as a diet coach. I feel like that's a super humble way of putting it. That's just my personal opinion. I feel like, you know, I get the vibe that you don't let this stuff go to your head. And in a way, to me, I feel like that's kind of part of what keeps you driving to move forward. It's like a sense of not feeling comfortable, not feeling done, not feeling like you've done enough where you can just be comfortable and stop. Like, you know, you could be the biggest guy in the gym and you can look around, and if you get comfortable with that, I feel like, you know, you're in a place then where, you know, things aren't going to continue on anymore. You lose the drive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, you got to be careful because, you know, you don't want to get complacent, but at the same time, if you're never grateful for what you accomplished, then what's it all for? You know, I mean, you're constantly on go. You never stop to smell the roses. You never stop to enjoy what you've accomplished or enjoy what you've been granted, I think is a better way of looking at it. Mm. But, you know, for me, I just like doing work and being creative and being productive. I get great satisfaction from that. You know, I get bored easily, so I like staying busy and challenging myself. Not overly busy. I am definitely not a fan of being overly busy, but I like being busy enough that I'm challenging myself and I'm doing new creative, productive work. Hmm. Like that's a life that I like living. But I mean, I don't have crazy, I mean, I don't bite off more than I can chew, I guess is how I should state it. You know, I'm just a coach. I'm just, and I do bodybuilding, probably not for a lot longer competitively. I mean, I'll always be a bodybuilder, but I mean, my life is, I try to keep things as simple as possible. You know, I mean, coaching is all I do. I don't run other businesses or anything like that. Yeah. But, you know, that allows me to have peace of mind and do my best at coaching. You know, that's how I like to live my life. But I think when it comes down to it, I just get bored easily and I just want to keep doing new work. You know, once I finish one project, it's like, okay, that was sweet. And I mean, I do appreciate the work I do. I mean, I don't like to gloat or anything like that. But I mean, I can be like, okay, that was really sweet. You know, that was great. I can probably be better. I can see where I can improve. Like even when you're successful, even when I'm successful, I say, okay, that was cool, but it could have been better. And now we're going to try and make it better for the next time. So let's get back to work and, you know, keep improving and making it better. I guess I'm like an artist. You know, I consider myself more of an artist than anything.
I can see that. Sure.
And so this is, just, I mean, like, do you paint the Mona Lisa and then go, yeah, bro, I'm done. Like an artist, like you're tormented by your work. Like you're just always working and always creating, you know? So I kind of look at what I do in a similar vein.
So when you say that, you know, you're keeping busy in this work, are you referring to everything? Are you referring to your coaching or to your own goals?
I would say both.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say both. I mean, with my job, I mean, there's new contests every weekend and there's always something going on.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, bodybuilding myself, it's just always evolving. You know, I mean, I'll be 40 this summer. I'm not going to be competing when I'm 50 or 60. So it's going to evolve into something else. It's still going to be some sort of quote unquote bodybuilding. But it's not, you know, it's going to be different.
Do you have any idea what you're going to do with yourself once you retire? I mean, I assume you're still going to train.
Retire from competing?
Yeah. Because you said, you know, you won't be doing it forever. You know, when that day comes, it's going to come for all of us. Just curious, have you thought about that at all yet? Or?
Well, I think as much as we all like to think that we're special snowflakes in the world, it's a really good idea to look at what other people in similar situations have done. Okay. Because you're not really that different from everyone else. So you can say, okay, what have other pros done when they stopped competing? A lot of them still train, but they downsize.
Yeah.
A lot of them, you know, still stay pretty muscular and looking good and training and everything through their 40s. And then maybe when they hit their 50s, they start to slow down, maybe drop back to to training less. Dorian Yates, I don't think even trains anymore.
Yeah.
I think he does yoga and biking or something. But, I mean, he trained for a while and looked great after his retirement. So, I mean, I'll probably follow a similar path to what those guys have done, because I'm not a special snowflake.
But what about...
We're all different, but I mean, it'll be something similar to that.
I have to wonder, though, you know, you said that you love the challenges, and I don't see that going away, you know, whether you retire or not, that stuff's always going to be there. And I'll be curious to see when that day comes, like, what will fill that space in your life, because something has to.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm still going to bodybuild for quite a while. By that, I mean train, diet, you know, all that stuff. It just won't be the stepping on stage part.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be things like, you know, trying to get the best, you know, lipid values that I can. You know, trying to get smaller but keep my strength up, you know. Try to get the best deadlift that I can at, you know, 200 pounds or 215 pounds or whatever. And that's personal stuff. But I think more than anything, I'll probably just channel that energy into another avenue, you know. Like, I mean, I put a lot into coaching now, but, you know, maybe I can put even more into coaching or some other avenue related. So, but, you know, it's impossible to predict how all that will happen.
Sure.
And it's impossible to predict what my mindset will be even a year from now. You know, I mean, we constantly have new experiences, and we're constantly bringing new data and new data, new insights into our brain, and that affects how we look at everything.
Yeah.
So, and you can't predict how your brain's going to think.
It's funny, because when I asked that, I didn't expect you to have an answer. This is what I expected, that I guess the way I would interpret it is like, you're just kind of going along for the ride and you're going to see what happens.
Yeah. I was thinking, I mean, this is kind of related. Like, I've moved away from Michigan a couple times, and I always come back here.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, I was like, you know, some people might get bored of Michigan or, you know, this area. A lot of people that I know from high school have moved away. And I was like, why haven't I gotten bored of Michigan? You know, why am I still here? And I think back over all the years, and it's like, Michigan has stayed the same. I mean, for the most part, you know, it's changed over the years, Michigan has stayed the same, but I've changed. You know, it's like, I'm a new person every day. I'm a new person every year. Like, I've grown up with Michigan, so it's not boring to me because I'm always changing.
Hmm.
Know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah, I moved away and I missed it. I didn't think I did at first, but eventually I did, and I'm comfortable here too. So you feel like there's no, I know you like to travel, but as far as like home base, you feel like, at least for now, this is where you want to be, huh?
I think anywhere else is just a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
I remember you saying before that, you know, Detroit was good for bodybuilding. You said, like, it's not expensive to live, and the food's, you know, not expensive. This is, everything's available to you. I wonder if that'll change, you know, whether, you know, when your goals in life change, you know, maybe bodybuilding doesn't become as important and something else.
It would take a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, over a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, probably 20 years or something like that. And then, you know, where are my parents? What are my parents doing? You know, they're going to be older then. I'm not going to want to live a million miles away from my parents when they're older and might need some help or sure. whatever. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, one other thing just kind of on this topic before we moved on. I guess I feel like we all do bodybuilding because we enjoy the muscle that's part of it. You know, we enjoy the challenge of achieving size. How do you feel about that, about the idea of, like you said, sizing down later?
I don't really care.
Really?
Because I like the muscle, but you might notice that, well, I mean, there's a few things. One, I don't go out much. It's not like I go to expos all the time wearing my little... I mean, I'm not involved in the bodybuilding community where people are seeing me all the time. I'm a coach, you know? And even in the gym, I'm not the guy wearing a tank top or a, you know, string tank top and little shorts or whatever.
Right.
I'm not really big on exuding the bodybuilder look at all. And I mean, I don't know. I look at Chris Aceto. Like, I have much more respect for a guy like Chris Aceto. I mean, I don't know. I want to be, if someone respects me, I would like it to be for my mind and not my body.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be a slob, but I have no problem being smaller. If I could have an ideal physique after I retired, it would be like Henry Rollins or something.
Mm, yeah.
I don't have a metabolism like that, so that would be very hard to do and sustain. I would have to basically be starving all the time and probably on some thyroid support or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I like that look, that sort of stringy, very lean but muscular. I'm talking about Henry Rollins now.
Yeah, I figured that.
Not the old Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins now, he's 56, and I mean, he's just wiry. Did you know Henry Rollins is one of the first kids ever put on Ritalin?
Was he really? Wow.
He was on it from preschool through 12th grade.
No kidding. Huh.
Like if you find like the annals of Ritalin, like these like books and stuff, he's got his pictures in it.
No kidding. Wow. It doesn't shock me though. Like that sounds like it would be a factoid about Henry Rollins.
Right. Right.
So, you know, all this stuff we're talking about is, you know, down the road, you know, back where we're at today. You're getting ready. You are dieting now, aren't you? Have you officially started or are you still transitioning to a diet?
Tomorrow is the last day of off season.
Okay.
Thursday is the first day of the diet.
Okay. You know, over time, you know, and I want to tell the audience too that, I'm lucky enough that I get to train back with Shelby and, I've seen you progress into several shows now, and I've seen that evolution. I see, you know, you change over time, and I'd say that you just get to be more and more focused as you get closer to the show, and you know, more intense.
Grumpy.
Yeah, that's another. You get quiet.
Thank you for using a nicer word than grumpy.
But, you know, no matter what, no matter how you're feeling, you always bring the same exact training consistency every workout that I've trained with you. And I understand, you know, 100% is going to be different every week. But I find that to be really interesting. And I feel like that in itself right there, that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say, you know, looking at you and seeing somebody that I can look up to and try to strive to be more like. Can you talk about what goes into your training preparation logistically and mentally?
Yeah, you know, I train 4 days a week, and I'm always playing a little bit around with different training styles. You've picked up on that. Yeah. You've training with me for a few years on back day, but I'm always experimenting a little bit. And I'll stick with something for a while and then maybe make some small changes and whatnot. But, getting ready for a workout, I know the workout that I'm going to do usually at least a week in advance, often further out than that, but definitely a week in advance. So usually, days before the workout, I'm going over it in my head and thinking about the numbers, thinking about the weight that I want to use, thinking about the sets and reps, thinking about percentage, things like that, in any form stuff that I need to work on. Mm. Maybe something that I noticed last time I did that exercise that I wanted to change or something like that. And I take a lot of notes. I keep a training journal. So I review stuff beforehand, a couple days beforehand. And then the day of, I think most bodybuilders are like this. You've got very specific habits.
Yeah. And
timing. You've got certain meals that have to be in at certain times. I have a certain sleep schedule and a nap schedule. Supplement schedule, you take your pre-workout at this time, everything's all it's like Groundhog's Day, bodybuilding version.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I'm a creature of habit for sure.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother me at all.
I do too. I think that a lot of us that like that do well with bodybuilding.
Right. So yeah, that's it really. I think about the workout a couple days in advance. I think about numbers and stuff like that. And then the day of, it's just a matter of, timing everything right with meals and supplements. And sleep is a big thing for me. If I don't get my morning nap, I'm really thrown off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like a baby, I guess.
Well, I'll start asking you that in the future. If you seem grumpy, I'll say, Shelby, did you get your nap today?
Yeah, I'll probably bite your head
off. I'll keep my distance when I say it.
Yeah.
So you've told me, too, before that the energy that goes into training preparation, like, you've said, it like basically just takes – half the day.
It takes the whole day because it's bookends.
Mm.
There's pre-training and then there's post-training. So the whole day is shot.
So I could see why you like to train 4 days a week then. It almost like that gives you some relief. I could see why you'd want days off.
Yeah. And I train probably a little bit too hard and too long. So I need to take a day off.
You think so? Do you think you push harder than you maybe should sometimes?
Maybe volume wise a little bit.
Yeah.
I talked to Jordan Peters and he's like, oh yeah, I do that workout in an hour and a half. Mm. And I'm over here doing it in like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and he's lifting, 400% more than me. So, and I don't think I really bullshit much. A good pace, but on some lifts, I think a lot of it is he's younger and he doesn't need to warm up as much as I do. I know that's what a lot of it is.
Yeah.
Because I will take Bill and I squat every Saturday now. And it's some pretty intense squatting and we will take 45 minutes to warm up for squats.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
Yeah. I don't think Jordan does that. Yeah. I don't think he needs to do that. So.
Hmm. So back in 2012, when you turned pro, there was a video that Dave Palumbo had shot with you backstage right after Masters Nationals. And for anybody out there who hasn't seen that video, I highly suggest type in, Shelby Starnes, Masters Nationals, and you'll find it. I have to say it's a very inspirational video to me, and I honestly I can't watch it without getting a little choked up every time. I feel like it really embodies, like I said, a lot of the things that I look up to. And part of it, you said, there's going to be very tough days, but bad days don't faze a champion. 10 bad days don't faze a champion. You get through it and you don't complain about it. We're all going to have bad days. What do you personally do to deal with those days, Shelby?
You know, when you're hurting really bad, like on a diet, that type of pain, what really helps is to try to keep your mind off of the present. Hmm. You know, the present's filled with pain when you're dieting, and it's probably not going to end anytime soon. but I mean, when you're dieting, I mean, you'll know what I'm talking about. There will be times of the day where you feel like you couldn't fight back if someone was trying to kill you with a stick. But then there's other times of the same day when you feel great.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of goes in waves. So just knowing that it's not always going to be terrible helps. But, you know, thinking about the future, it's comical because I know everybody's brain goes through this. I'll be working with a first-time competitor, and about 4 weeks out, they start emailing me like a tentative off-season diet that they're creating for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, bro, everyone does that. like that looks great, and I know you're just doing it to keep your mind off the pain of dieting right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're interested in making progress post-show, but part of it is just it's just nice to fantasize about eating copious food after the show. So it's, you know, it's something to keep your mind off. You know, you have to keep your mind busy. Think about the future. Think about how you want to look. Think about the pain of not following your diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do things to, you know, a lot of people start a project when they diet, build a deck, build a deck on the backyard, something to keep your mind busy to help keep your mind off the pain. But I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're really going to get shredded, and I don't mean, you know, lean looks good in the gym lighting or whatever, but like sick, nasty, just sick shredded.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be pretty painful for you, especially if you don't have the best genetics for it. So, I mean, you just have to suck it up and deal with it. I mean, it's just pure mental fortitude. You know, are you going to give up? Like, I've worked with people before that have been Marines and been to boot camp before, and they said that boot camp was a vacation compared to, like, serious, hardcore pre-contest dieting.
I've heard that, too.
Where
would you put it, Shelby? Like, if we were to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 10 being the most pain you could tolerate, where's contest prep and coming in at the end?
Well, I've had a very easy life. You know, I have never been to war. I've never been tortured. I've never, I've never gone through anything nasty. So, you know, I've lived a pretty easy, sheltered life. So, but I mean, for me, I would say that, yeah, I mean, some of the darkest days of dieting are probably the hardest. You know, those are the times that have tested my discipline the most.
Hmm.
But I mean, I haven't done shit. You know, I'm not, I'm just a guy in the suburbs.
So what else am I missing here? If I'm missing anything, I mean, I know that I feel like there's so much we could talk about here, and we only really have an hour to do this show. Is there anything that comes to mind that you feel like we should mention that we haven't discussed?
I guess, you know, just the concept of pain and pleasure, you know, I mean, that's, it's the easiest way to look at motivation. You know, why are people motivated and some people aren't? You know, what you attach in your, you know, in your head, what is pain to you and what is pleasure? If pleasure to you is winning a contest and pain is not winning that contest, like, and I mean like true, like mentally, like pleasure and pain is linked to winning and not winning that contest.
Yeah.
Then you're probably going to do pretty good on your diet. But if in your head you attach pleasure to playing your Nintendo and eating chips and you attach pain to the idea of cardio, maybe you're not going to do as well, you know? And that's one of those things that's like, well, how do you change that? I mean, it's a good insight. It's a good way to look at things, but how do you change it? Someone that attaches pleasure to, you know, sitting on the couch and eating chocolates, how do you change that to attaching pleasure to winning a show? I don't know that you can. You know, it's hard to teach champion mindset. It's just a way of looking at things.
Yeah. Well, all right, Shelby, this is really interesting. And, you know, like I said, man, I really appreciate having you on here. It's a show that I've put off for a while. So I hope that I've done the topic justice and that I've done justice interviewing you.
It was great, Scott, to give my ego a great boost, but I was blushing half the time. Should probably do this once a week, I think.
There we go. Yeah. Well, blue collar muscle radio too. Yeah, absolutely, man. So Wednesday is coming up tomorrow. We're gonna train some back. You've got a bunch of deadlifts in there, you said, right?
Yes, sir. We're gonna be deadlifting for a while.
All right, man. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you there. And once again, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Take care, Scott.
Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Shelby Starnes. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Think they're smart, can't think themselves. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Life is-